You're listening to DottoTech, helping you get the most out of your technology wherever you use it, at home, at school, or at work. Brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. 20 years, the trusted voice of technology in Canada, Steve Dotto.
And welcome to DottoTech. I'm Steve Dotto. Glad you could join us today. This show is dedicated to helping you get the most out of your technology wherever you use it. We've got a great show lined up for you today. My producer, Art Factor, is sitting in. How are you doing, Art?
I'm doing great, Steve. Thank you so much.
Good. Are you excited about today's show?
I'm excited about every Wednesday show. I don't know why you ask me every week. Like, I'm going to say no. Not this week, Steve.
Well, if you maybe said no, it would be a sign that maybe we should juggle things a bit.
That's true.
Yeah. So we're going to be chatting with Colin Cottrell from London Drugs on. We're going to be talking about the digital conversion that we all have to do on TV, or that we don't have to do, but that's been mandated by the CRTC. It's confusing, but I think Colin's going to be able to walk us through it. Do you know anything about this, Art, yet?
I know a little. I remember you were telling me that he was going to come on, so I did some research, and I am under the impression, and hopefully he'll be able to correct me if I'm wrong, but you don't necessarily have to have digital cable to get like an HD signal. It's in the air somewhere.
Yes, and that's exactly what Colin's going to be talking to us about. So we'll let him explain things, but I think it's going to be clear.
Free TV. Who's going to tune away from that?
Free TV. Yes, indeed, it is. And we've also got one of my favorite guests, Michael Kozlowski, is coming on today. We're going to talk about ebooks.
I'm voting him always the best dressed guest.
Is he always best dressed?
Yes. He always looks like he's coming from or going to a club.
Oh, I think that's just the way he dresses.
I'm just saying.
Are you saying I don't look like I'm going to or coming from
a
club?
No, you look like you're going to or coming from the beach or some sort of garage sale.
Very, very classy. We're also going to begin this week to talk to some local app developers. I reached out to the app development community, the people developing apps for iPhones and for Android phones and for iPads, and because there's a whole community here in Vancouver. And over the next couple of weeks, we've got a whole bunch of them coming in. I'm pretty excited about that. Are you thinking about developing an app?
I actually do have some app ideas in mind. I'm not going to tell you because not here.
Then it would
here.
Be out there.
Yeah.
It would be out there. Then you don't want to do that. That's one of the things Microsoft about developing an app is you want to be secret until it's ready to go because somebody's going to steal your idea. And then it's amazing how once if you have an idea and then somebody else releases it, you say they stole your idea.
Everyone has the same ideas. It's just the first one who gets the idea out there.
There's only a limited number of ideas that are available. So anyways, we do have a great show lined up.
App of the Week is brought to you by MacStation, your Apple solutions experts.
It is time for App of the Week, our weekly segment where Chris Miller gets humiliated because my app is cooler than his app. Chris, what do you got this week?
What I have this week? Can you do 100 push-ups, sir?
No, I can't do 100 push-ups.
There is a app called 100 push-ups. Now, what it does is you put into it how many push-ups you can do right now, and it will take you through a month or two-month plan, depending on your shape, in order to get to the place where you can get to 100 push-ups.
Oh.
And you know what? It works.
Can you do 100 push-ups?
I can now.
You cannot.
Can't do?
You cannot.
Can't do.
I think we should make him do it, Art. What do you think?
I got time.
Well, okay. They're girly push-ups.
Oh, you do them on your knees. Wow. Okay. So basically, it's a cool training device.
It's just a nice way to it sets a little reminder. It gives a little alert. Yeah. It puts it on your iCal.
Turns it into a bit of a game.
It does.
Okay, I've got WordLens.
WordLens.
Have you heard of WordLens?
I have not.
WordLens is a translation utility. You point it at any sign and hit the button, and the camera in on your iOS device, the screen changes to the translation.
Mm.
So if it's French to English or English to French and you point it at a stop sign, the word stop, it will read the word stop and it will change it to re.
That's fantastic.
It's amazing. And you have to, it's not cheap. It's like $10 and then you have to buy add-on packs.
Right.
So it's one of the more expensive apps you'll ever find. But it just for sheer technical clarity, it's amazing.
That's pretty cool.
I think, what's the score, Art?
If I was to do the math correctly, I believe it's 12-2.
Two. He's got two. But today, I was really concerned about today's score.
Oh, today. Well, then I'm going to give that one to the big man, Steve Dotto.
Once again.
But does it make you a better person?
If you show us the 100 push-ups.
Yeah, if you do the 100 push-ups, you could.
We don't have that kind of time.
Okay.
If you want more information on these apps, drop, I will have links at the website.
He never said how long it would take him to do those 100.
I did not.
One a day for 3 months.
App of the Week is brought to you by MacStation. Book a one-on-one training with our Apple specialists or sign up for one of our free workshops. Get the most out of your Mac with MacStation.
Joining me in studio right now, a regular on the show in the world of e-book readers, Michael Kozlowski from goodereader.com. Gee, I juxtaposed your website. How are you doing, Michael?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing just great. Lots of news. So much news in the ebook market. If there is an area of tech that is just chugging along, it's tablets A, and B, it's got to be the whole ebook market. People are just getting it now.
It's in a constant state of flux, and that's one of the reasons why I enjoy covering it so much, is that it's one of the segments that day to day, week to week, there's just always so much going on.
And the news that some of the news that you've brought to me today is, I've always felt that education, that tablets and ebooks in education are going to make a profound difference at some point in just the economy of education. And the first step might be happening in that direction.
Yes, Amazon has just released a program where they're getting involved in textbook rental systems. And you can have savings up to 80% versus the normal cost of a textbook.
Which is even way better than the used textbooks, which are like usually about 50% or so, or 60% of the price. Yeah.
Yeah, and these are digital. So whether you purchase the book straight up or whether you rent the book, it's more accessible on more devices, laptop, tablets, e-readers.
So walk me through the process a little bit. So Amazon has a catalog of major textbooks. Now this is for Canadian schools as well. Now, yes, we're talking university and college level,
right,
book textbooks. So now students can rent them for a period of time.
You can rent them for as little as 30 days, and the maximum is 360 days. And if you go over, then you could extend it.
You can extend it. So you rent the textbook, and it loads onto your ebook reader, whether it be a Kindle, a Kobo, but an iPad. You can even read it on your notebook. It's just in a format that will read.
As long as you have an official Kindle app on, like for a PC, you need Kindle for a PC.
Okay.
If you were to have an Android device, you need the official Kindle app for Android.
So you can't use this on the Kobo reader. You can't use it on the Nook.
No.
Got to be on a Kindle.
Yeah.
A Kindle or on your PC or tablet.
Right. Mac or any other portable device, even HP touchpad. As long as you have an official branded Amazon official application, you're good to go.
Got it. So that narrows down the market a little bit, but still, this is now. What about taking notes and stuff like this? Because when students buy books, they typically write a whole bunch of notes in the margin. How does that handle?
When you rent a book, you can obviously make highlights and annotations in the book on the margins or wherever you want. And
the Kindle reader's got a pretty good facility with that little keyboard and stuff for actually making notes.
Right, exactly. So it makes it really easy, especially with the Kindle line of e-readers with the full
keyboard. Yeah.
So you can, it's very easy to type and make these sort of notes. And obviously when you have a touchscreen tablet, you have the full keyboard as well.
Pop up on screen. Yeah.
Yeah. And when you make those notes, even when the book is returned back to Amazon, you actually get to keep those notes. Mm-hmm. And they're stored in the Amazon cloud. So they're stored there forever. You can access them anytime, even when the textbook is gone.
Wow. So students in university starting now, and I guess each university you're going to have to look to see if Amazon does have all of the textbooks that you need, but they could consider getting, and I'm just going to paint out a scenario here. If a student was to purchase an iPad as their main computer, they could be using it for, of course, all their email and web browsing, that sort of stuff. But by downloading the Kindle app, now renting their textbooks, that can be their ebook reader as well, and all of their textbooks would live on their iPad. They would have the ability to take the notes. It could be one device that could be just a magical device for education.
I agree. And most textbooks are in full color. If you're in biology, if you're involved in a lot of different sectors, most of the pictures are all in color, whether you're looking at color DNA strains or whether you're looking at cellular biology. I mean, all these things, I mean, they really shine under color devices. And I think that's why tablets especially are really going to benefit through these textbooks. And Amazon's going to offer over 20,000 of them on the first day that they launched. So there's really no shortage of books available.
That's going to be fascinating. And when you consider the cost of textbooks, purchasing textbooks, in a very short period of time, it's going to pay for a device. Certainly, certainly a Kindle would be paid for with the two or three textbooks.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you were to buy a textbook on Amazon, they range from about $60 to $150.
Which is what it costs at the bookstores. Yeah.
Exactly. Where if you rent it, you rent it for as long as you're actually borrowing it from Amazon. So you can, as little as a few dollars for, you know, like a month or a little bit more. So it's very economically feasible for students on a shoestring budget.
Well, I'm going to have a chat. I'm going to have a long chat with my son who's entering his third year at Wilfrid Laurier. Maybe Luke gets a Kindle in the stocking this year. That might be a way that I can save a few dollars on my textbook charges, because of course it doesn't go to the student. It goes to the dad. You know what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break, because we've got a whole bunch of other stuff I want to talk about with Michael Kozlowski of goodereader.com.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. You're listening to Dottotech, brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
Continuing on our conversation with Michael Kozlowski, Good E-Reader. We've just been talking about Amazon textbook rental, and while we're on the break, we just continued chattering about it. I think that's a profound and exciting move. It's going to change the face of education. The technology is modifying our society. It's fantastic. New people coming to the game. iRiver.
Yes, iRiver has been a company that actually has been making sort of lower quality e-readers for a while. They never really got a good distribution system, but that's all changed with the iRiver Story HD. It's the first e-reader that taps into the Google Books ecosystem. So you have, you know, over a million free books that are available that you can just download to your device, and about 100,000 books for purchase. So bestsellers, James Patterson, Daniel Steele, Charlene Harris, you know, all the mainstays.
The Google space. So Google, not satisfied with just changing the world of social networking and stepping all over Facebook, now they're going to step all over Amazon and Kobo as well, as Google is stepping into the space. Let's talk a little bit about that whole Google ecosphere of books. Now, Google came under a little bit of fire for as they were digitizing vast libraries of books and stuff like that. Do you recall what was happening with that?
Yeah, really Google has a mandate that they really want to digitalize every major literary work in history. Mm-hmm. And it seems that a lot of the literary works do fall under royalties, or, you know, you have an author who is obviously deceased, but their great-grandkids are still alive, and they fight Google saying, well, the royalties belong to us. They're not free. Mm-hmm. So Google's kind of taken a step back and said, you know, we're fighting a large amount of legal battles. It's been going on for over 4 years, and it's still in court now.
Because it's a complex idea. I mean, Google is saying, wait a minute, we're just digitizing these products and then we're giving them away for free. We're not making money on it. However, Google makes money on it because it's part of the Google universe, right?
Yeah.
So it's a very complex situation as they move ahead. But Google is also stepping into the space by our more traditional booksellers and actually selling the product. Now, is the Google format different than what we're seeing from Kindle and Kobo?
No, not really. Google Books functions under the EPUB format.
Okay.
So with the Google eBooks, you can really get them on the Kobo, the Nook, most devices. It's not compatible with the Kindle because Kindle has its own proprietary format. With the iRiver, it allows you to actually access the store on the device. So it's the first device that actually does that.
Because now if a Kobo user wanted to buy Google Books, they would have to go through several hoops in order to download the books they'd have to manually load the books on, as opposed to accessing the store directly. So the difference is the iRiver can access the Google store directly and do their purchases with Google, which in the future might be a very appealing prospect as we start to see the Google Wallet being launched this summer and some new payment options with Google, that sort of stuff.
Right. So the iRiver story right now is only, they have an exclusive relationship with Target in the US.
Okay.
So if you live in Canada or international, if you want to do that, you would have to buy it online through various websites.
Including yours.
Yes. We have a website, shopereaders.com, all one word, and we sell obviously all the latest and greatest e-readers. So
okay, so we're starting to see new players and new options coming down the road, and some old players are leaving us.
Yes, regrettably, the Borders bookstore chain, just not in the U.S., but worldwide, is collapsing. It collapsed very famously in Australia about a month ago, mm-hmm. and in the U.S., it has gone through bankruptcy court. No buyers have come along, so it looks like 11,000 employees are going to be sacked and 399 locations are going to be gone.
Borders. Now, people have an online – some Canadians will have an online relationship with Borders. They will have purchased books online from them in their library. What happens to those people?
Well, Kobo, who is a major Canadian e-reader company who makes e-readers and sells e-books, is going to be taking all Borders accounts and transitioning it to the Kobo ecosystem. So if you have a tablet that came with the Borders app and you've purchased books, or you've just purchased books on your own from Borders, all those books that you purchased will be available via your Kobo account now.
Okay.
So you're not going to lose them, and any future purchases that you make, you'll be making through Kobo. So it's a seamless transition in the digital ebook sphere, but not so seamless for all the people going to be losing their jobs yeah. and all the physical bookstores just disappearing.
One more, so we're down to really just three major bookstores left in North America. And once it's all said and done, it's just a major consolidation happening.
Yeah.
You mentioned Kobo. I received my Kobo Touch about 3 weeks ago in the mail, and I was really excited. I set it up, and then it got usurped. I've been pushed back to using the old Kobo 3G or Kobo, sorry, Wi-Fi, the older Kobo. Talk to me about what's happening with the new Kobo Touch. Is it meeting expectations? Is it doing well?
It's very solid and it sells very well. Most Chapters locations in the Lower Mainland aren't going to even have any until August because
wow.
as soon as they get a shipment, it's gone within 24 hours.
Wow.
So you're hard-pressed to really find them. The Future Shop does have a few, but mainly they're the pink or so they don't really have a lot of the black or just the white ones available.
Yeah. So it's I've noticed a profound difference with the Touch versus the Wi-Fi. It's so much more responsive and so much faster. It's not a small step ahead. I think it's a big step ahead for that platform.
For sure. It feels very 2011. And one of the things that I really like about Kobo and their latest Touch is the firmware updates that are coming. Since it's really been released, Kobo has issued 3 firmware updates, and it really gives you a lot of freedom and greater enhancements using the Kobo Touch.
Mm-hmm.
With the latest one, it actually has a drawing application now where you can take advantage of the touch screen and actually draw pictures and save them. And when you save them, they appear right on your home screen.
Okay.
So it's very neat. And they allow you a lot of freedoms now to load in your own fonts, where most e-readers come with maybe 2 or 3 different fonts. Whereas if you read a newspaper, sometimes you want to read it in a different font than, say, an e-book. So
mm-hmm.
Kobo now allows you to download fonts from the internet and actually load them onto your device. So you can load one font or you can load 100. It's all up to you.
So the lots of change or lots of new options in the Kobo world. If you're looking for information on anything in the ebook world, goodereader.com is the site that's managed by Michael, and it is a wealth of ebook knowledge. Good ebook knowledge, I guess.
That's right. Yeah, we write anywhere between 5 and 12 articles a day. We have 5 to 6 authors on staff, so we do have a varying perspective of the entire publishing, e-reader, and tablet industry.
Thanks so much for coming in, and we will visit with you again shortly, I hope.
Thanks.
You know, you reach a certain age and you have your team, the people who make your life work for you. You got a banker, you got some insurance fellow, you've got the guy that does the insurance on your car. And if you're smart, you have your mortgage broker. My mortgage broker, Bill Macklem. He's done, I think, 4 mortgages for me, maybe more. I can't remember, but they've all been great. The key to getting a mortgage broker is they don't just shop one mortgage to you, as they talk to all the different lenders and get the best mortgage that fits in your life. And Bill Macklem's the one that's done it for me. If you want to get Bill to be your guy, and I think he'd be interested, visit BillyMack.com. That's Billy Mack with an I. Alwyn Hsu from Wireless Etc. is in the studio, and we're going to talk a little bit more about tablets this week. And I've been playing with a Samsung Galaxy tablet, and it's a nice little tablet. It surprised me. It almost always seems like the kid brother to all the other tablets, maybe because of the marketing money or some of the other things, but it's a pretty functional tablet.
Well, it was the second major tablet announcement. iPad was the first one.
Yeah.
Then Samsung announced that they're coming with the Galaxy Tab. And a lot of people think of it as the little brother just because of its size.
Yeah.
It has a 7-inch display versus the 10-inch displays that you see on iPad. So it is a lot smaller. But the one thing I'll say is it's definitely not less powerful.
No, it's as far as accessing the web, now you do want to get it enabled for G3. You want to have it on the network and stuff like that. But it's pretty speedy as far as browsing the web and searching for your email. The keyboard works pretty well. I'm pretty impressed with it overall. And if you've got really big pockets, you can stick it in your pocket.
Well, somebody told me this, and I don't know if it's true or not, but the Galaxy Tab, when it was designed so you could slide it into your suit pocket, your inside suit pocket.
Wow.
And I heard that, and I tried it myself, and now, you know where I carry my Galaxy Tab?
In your suit pocket?
Inside suit pocket.
But you look like you're in the SWAT team walking around with body armor because you got this big square on your chest.
You know, yeah, well, if someone pulls up against my jacket, they can see it. But, generally, no, people don't even notice that I have it, and all of a sudden I pull it out, and everyone looks at me and go, where did that come from?
Now, you're a BlackBerry user, so I'm going to ask you, when you've got the tablet, when you've got the Galaxy and you're traveling around with the Galaxy, are you using it for your email rather than the BlackBerry?
For me, yes. Well, it depends on what I'm looking at. If it's a quick little email that came in, a one-liner, I'll use my BlackBerry. But if I have a document, an attachment, whether it be an Excel file or a PowerPoint file, I'll use the tablet to open it up because you got the bigger screen and you can see what the entire document looks like.
I was traveling back and forth to the island a few times over the last couple of weeks, and I had the tablet, the Galaxy Tab, with me for all those trips. And all the time on the ferry, I was spending just browsing the web, just doing a little bit of research, using Mnemonic to clip different news stories for the show and stuff like that. And I found it a very capable web browsing tool.
And I do as well. When I sit at home, I actually usually have the tablet sitting beside me because it's an instant on. You just push the button on the side, it turns on, type in the website, and off you go. It's really changed the way that I browse. It's no longer walking to that desktop or powering up the laptop. I just turn it on, and off I go.
And if you are on a budget, it really you can get some pretty smoking deals right now on the Samsung Galaxy.
Yeah, Samsung has really gotten behind this product, and they recognize, Apple's the market leader.
Mm-hmm.
So to make some inroads, they've gone very aggressive in terms of pricing. Right now, on a 3-year term, you can get these as low as $199, and then plus some of our additional promotions, you can actually get the device down to $50 on a new 3-year term.
That's pretty impressive. Now, you are going to have to add some sort of a data plan. You've got to figure out a way to piggyback this on your existing data plan or buy another data plan with the tablet. What's the options there?
Well, the nice thing about it is, if you already have a data plan, so you're using a smartphone of some type, you can piggyback onto that data plan. As low as $10 a month allows you to share the data plan with your smartphone, and you can use two devices. So there's a lot of different cost-effective ways in order to have not only data on your smartphone, but now data on your tab. And once again, we talked about the pricing of the tab, that device. You're talking 10% of what an iPad would cost you.
It could be as little as that. So if you are intrigued by the tablet, Samsung Galaxy tablet might be the way to go. You can stop by Wireless, et cetera, at Costco, have a look, see if it does work for you. And I would have no trouble at all making it my main tablet to travel with all the time.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. FitTech is brought to you by Fit for Work, leaders in corporate health and wellness programs. Your fitness is our job.
PJ Wren, Fit for Work is my guest. It is time for us to do our FitTech, and you're going to do something very low tech. You're going to talk to me about how I breathe.
Yes, yes. We're going to talk all about heavy breathing this segment.
Okay, well, don't look at me like that when you say that. Just tell me what you want me to tell me about breathing.
That a lot of us don't know how to do it properly, and I didn't either until I started taking yoga.
Okay.
And they teach the deep breathing. We tend to breathe right into the chest, and that's going to affect our performance up to 20% when you're on the treadmill or elliptical or in the weight room.
So let me guess, you have to breathe right down into your abdomen.
Wow, good guess.
Your diaphragm. Engage the diaphragm.
Yeah.
So you know why I know this?
How?
Because I used to play trumpet and I sing.
Oh, see? Actually, I used to personal train a singer, and she did. She had the best ability to control her breath doing intervals.
Yeah, we learned. It's all breath control. And it's about breathing deep and using your abdomen to breathe. And when you think about it, it's a whole different process. It's lazy to breathe in your chest is the problem. It's work to breathe with your abdomen.
Yeah. And the best way I tell my people to figure out how to breathe right straight into the diaphragm is to lie on your back with your knees bent and then place your hands on the bottom rib cage and inhale nice and deep through your nose, and you should feel your hands expand underneath the rib cage and then slowly let it go. And that's just an easy, simple way, tactile way for you to figure out whether or not you are getting that breath all the way down. But if you don't, if you continue chest breathing throughout the years, you know, you're going to lose elasticity in the rib cage. You're going to decrease your performance. You're not going to be able to get as much out of your body. And you actually can affect your oxygen blood levels too, which I found very interesting.
So it's a simple thing. It's one of the simple things, so but a huge benefit.
Yeah, on the blog, I put three different exercises that you can do. So, yeah.
And the thing is to make it a habit, is to, while you're driving, just think about it. And the other thing it does, and I'll throw out one extra thing for you, because I do think about these things occasionally. You're looking at me it improves your posture. When you're breathing properly, you have to sit properly. Yep. You have to straighten your spine. You have to do all those things in order. And I'm sitting up straighter now and I'm breathing better.
I can see that. Yes. Well done.
I don't want to be too obvious.
PJ's
got lots of these tips. Is that everything for this one, or did you have any other point you wanted to make?
No, just check out the blog on your website, because I did put out some great breathing exercises, and they, you know, can be done. Like you said, driving, sitting at your desk, lying down, wherever.
And this is one of the things PJ recommends that doesn't hurt. It's awesome. Fit for Work is our website. Drop in and visit it.
Brought to you by Fit for Work, making sluggish workplaces into invigorated workplaces. Visit us online at www.fitforwork.ca.
Joining me in studio now, Colin Cottrell, a merchandising manager at Lennon Drugs, and we're going to discuss something which was in the news a lot a way back, but is finally coming to roost now, which is this digital to analog conversion that the different broadcasters have been scrambling to make sure that they have the gear for. This is very different than high def TV, which has just been a revolution and most people are enjoying now. Colin, what's the genesis of this? CRTC made some changes to the rules.
We're following the coattails of the U.S. They're freeing up that band of frequency.
Mm-hmm.
So that mandates everyone to the TV broadcasters to get off the analog airways, make room for other technologies and whatnot, and move to digital.
Okay. So what's happening is the people who have an old analog TV with an old antenna, which we all used to have when we were kids, I guess, that bandwidth of signal, that analog signal is going away very soon.
For the most part.
Okay.
Not 100%. So if you're a city of less than 300,000 people, for example, you're not mandated to change over.
Okay. Yeah. So small towns can be staying.
Right.
But bottom line is there's going to be less and less service on that. And so if you're just taking free television right now over the air, things are probably going to change for you. But they're going to change for the better if you just make a couple of modifications, because the over the air digital signal is spectacular.
Absolutely. Fantastic. Yeah.
So, and this is where I think the confusion lies. People think that they are digital now because they have a cable box and they're getting cable from Shaw or from Rogers or from Delta Cable or any of TELUS, any of these cable providers. But we're not talking about that level of digital, even though that signal is a digital, but that's a cable signal. This is over the air now.
Yeah. The cable signals are compressed.
Yeah.
So they're going to be substandard to an uncompressed high-definition signal.
Okay. And so what we're talking about is going back to the days of having an antenna.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's also we're going back to the days of free TV. You're not going to pay for any of these channels if you have it. So what does the average consumer need? Let's say that they've got their plasma, they've got their LCD TV at home, and so they're halfway there already, right?
In most cases, yeah. If your LCD or plasma is within the last, say, 3 years, maybe four, all you need is an antenna, because chances are that set will have an ATSC tuner or a digital tuner built into it.
That's what you have to look for, is you have to look to see if it has a tuner built in.
Right.
Okay, and then there'll be a port on the back. What's the antenna connection look like?
It would just be an antenna in.
It says antenna in. Yeah. Okay, so it's a coax cable.
Yeah.
Now, what do these antennas themselves look like, and how much do they cost?
It's all relative to how close you are to the actual transmission signal.
Okay.
And that will determine the position and the size and the height that you position the antenna.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you're say in North Vancouver, mm-hmm. people will be able to receive off-air signals with probably I'm pushing it here, but probably a pair of rabbit ears.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then there's other steps.
So we're going back to the rabbit ears days.
And some people could if they're that close.
And the youngest kid in the family has to go up and stand near them and adjust them and hold them just a certain way to get
Yes and no. Yes and no. A digital signal does not fade in or out.
Okay.
So there's no ghosting. There's nothing like that. You either get it
or you don't. Okay.
So you keep rotating that antenna until you get the picture.
And then once it's there?
And once it's there, it's there. You're locked.
Okay. Yeah. And then, and what about on the roof? Are we going to have people installing these things on their roofs? Do we have to go to that level, or is it going to be
in room? I believe you will. Once people see the quality of this, mm-hmm. they will.
And let's talk a little bit about the quality. So just a minute. So we've got, with your regular TV now, you can now get a digital signal, which is replacing part of the analog signal. Mm-hmm. And what stations are we going to get? Is it just the local station? So we're going to get the Globals, the CBCs?
I guess to oversimplify, any station that has made the commitment to change over or has been mandated to change over, mm-hmm. That's within, let's say a 65 kilometer radius from where you live.
Oh, okay.
In and around there, and that's a kind of an average to larger size antenna. I'm not saying that's the limitation.
Mm-hmm.
You can get larger antennas, but you will need to the further you are away.
Okay.
So you really need to determine who is broadcasting and how far away.
So for most people, say in the lower mainland area of Vancouver, they're going to get their Global, they're going to get their CBC, they're going to get their. I guess Rogers doesn't. Of course,
Global and CBC for sure.
For sure, yeah.
You may even get a KVOS Bellingham.
Okay.
And it's quite possible, depending on where you are, you get Victoria stations as well.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And so now the hardware is an antenna. You drop by London Rugs, you guys have an assortment of antennas. They cost and range from...
Yeah, our antennas range from $10 for a basic pair of rabbit ears to about $150 for a fairly large, serious outdoor directional antenna.
Okay, which you're going to be installing outside. You're going to be lining up and getting this. Now, let's talk about the quality, because mm-hmm. when we go high def, everybody's experienced high def now, and they love it. But the high def that we're going to get over this broadcast is actually better than the HD that we're getting from our cable provider.
It is.
And it's not just a little bit better. It's an order of magnitude
better. It's considerably better. If you were to see a compressed high-definition signal, which is our cable and satellite providers.
Mm-hmm. Which is pretty darn good.
Oh, it's good. Yeah. Oh, I'm not knocking it. Believe me. But if you were to see that side by side with an HD ATSC off-air signal, mm-hmm. It's night and day.
So for most of us, this is going to come to roost come October, because we're going to want hockey.
Yeah, for sure.
Because once you watch that, because we all know how high def has changed viewing hockey.
Yeah.
If we're going to be getting that from CBC and high def, because that's really the sport that we're going to be getting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't care if I can watch Desperate Housewives or something of that nature. Yeah. It just makes not that much difference in my life.
I know of a few of the managers in our chain there that have already set this up for themselves, mm-hmm. Specifically for that reason, just so that they can get the hockey games.
So this is going to be, this isn't really, for most of us, isn't going to change. This isn't something we have to do. It's something that we might want to do because we are going to, and then we're just going to have to pick and choose when we want to use that free signal. And for some of us, like a lot of people that just use cable only for sports.
Yeah.
That might be an option.
They might want to have a look into it. And that's not throwing away your cable.
Yeah.
It's just getting this option. If you can get the signal, which I think most people can, depending on where they are.
And
it's a cheap investment.
Yeah, and for the rest of us for people that do rely on analog, things may change for them. And for cottage people with cabins and stuff mm-hmm. like that, it's something that they're going to have to give some serious thought to. But you know, now being able to watch the hockey game in high def at the cottage, that's not bad either.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're going to have to check. It's back to the old days of where is the signal available and sniffing it out. Now, is there any easy way to know if we have a good signal in our area? Especially if once you get into the outlying areas?
Yes.
Is there any easy way to find it out before you invest in the antenna?
Absolutely. You go to tvfool.com.
Okay, a website, tvfool.com.
Yep, And you basically just key in your postal code or your address and go through a series of prompts, and it will tell you what satellites are within your region and by code of color. So if you're getting a green color on that satellite, that tells you that you probably just need a tabletop antenna. If it's yellow, you need a larger antenna. If it's red, you'll need a large, you know, outdoor antenna.
And you'll get an idea of what stations you can get at that point.
Absolutely. Right? It goes right down to the call letters.
And the investment is purchasing an antenna for anywhere between $20 and $200, but there's no subscription fees.
No subscription fees.
TV is free from that point on. Yeah. The cable companies can't be thrilled about this. And it's better quality.
Yeah, it's just you're not going to get the selection you do with cable or satellite.
You don't get the selection you do.
And one other thing I'd like to note is with London Drugs, if you purchase an antenna and it doesn't work for you, we have a 30-day return policy. So you can try it, and if it doesn't work, you can always bring it back. So that shouldn't be.
That gives you a little more security.
Yeah.
Awesome. Colin Cottrell from London Drugs, thanks for filling us in on the digital to analog conversion that we are currently going through.
You're welcome, Steve.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Do you have a comment or question for Dottotech? Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. Dottotech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
A few weeks ago, I reached out to the local market and said, who's developing apps in the Vancouver area? Just to find out what sort of app developers were out there, because I'm really compelled by the whole story behind how people are writing their own apps and then distributing them to a worldwide market. And I got quite a few responses. And one of the responses I got was from Tibor Horvath, who is with audioforge.ca. Tibor, thanks for coming in.
Hey.
And so you have been writing apps for a very long time.
Yeah, since the end of 2008.
Since the end of 2008. Yeah, yeah. And you're an audiophile. You're an audio guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just like music and like to dabble in filters and all the math that's behind making music.
Okay, so the science behind the sound. And you've been building apps, and you've got your website is audioforge.ca. And as I looked, I mean, you're doing quite well on iTunes. You're a fairly popular app developer.
Yeah.
You're happy with it. So some of your apps are really for professionals, but there are a few that kind of trickle down into the consumer space. Tell me about Equalizer.
Yeah, Equalizer is really a iPod app replacement.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of listening through your iPod app, you listen through Equalizer. And the advantage, so why you would do it, is you can actually adjust your frequencies. So you can boost your bass or your higher frequencies if you're losing your hearing,
mm-hmm.
and so on, and just adjust to.
You can tweak it the way you would with an equalizer in on your stereo system. Now, so most people when they're listening on an iPhone or an iPod Touch or an iPad, they're using iTunes to listen to their music. So you're saying that we would actually listen to the music through Equalizer instead of listening through iTunes.
That's correct.
And now, does it respect the playlists and all those sorts of things that we create?
Absolutely.
And so it replaces iTunes? Apple can't be happy with you. You can't replace iTunes. iTunes is a religion.
It isn't. Actually, initially there were some problems with that, but they came over it. Right now, it's only really the phone app and the messages app that you really can't touch.
So within iTunes itself, you do have a couple of presets where you can adjust the sound a little bit, but you're looking at me like
the problem is your mobile, right? You have your iPhone with you, but not your iTunes and your computer.
Mm-hmm.
So what you want to do is when you're in your car, you want to adjust your settings probably differently than at home, or you have better headphones or the very cheap white ones, and you can just tweak your sound to where you are. And sometimes you're just in a construction site and there is some noise that you want to overcome.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do that.
So do you have presets that, because like I'm not good at setting my thing. Yeah. So this is optimized for the cheap white eye. If you haven't bought a better set of headphones and that sort of stuff.
Not that complex. What I have is actually presets that focus on audiobooks or podcasts. Oh, okay. So you can emphasize the voice,
mm-hmm.
or if you know that you have to boost your higher frequencies, you have presets for that and so on. There are about 14, I believe, presets that I included. And it's really easy to change them, though, and you hear it immediately.
Mm-hmm.
So it's everything is very visual. You just touch control points and move them around, and you hear it right away.
Okay. Now, how much does the app cost?
It's $2.99.
So $2.99 for a whole new player. And then, and what about the organization? So you've done an awful lot with dealing with the quality of sound. One of the big aspects of iTunes, although you can't really... you can now on the iPad, I guess, you can organize your playlists. Mm-hmm. How is that organized within your app? How does it the music come in? How do I adjust my playlist and that sort of stuff?
So you can just take over the playlists that you have.
Oh, so you can still organize them in iTunes and all that kind of thing.
So you can keep that. And additionally, you can even change things on the fly.
Mm.
So if you, let's say, just pick an album that you like, but you know song 3 and 5 you hate.
Mm-hmm.
But everything else you like, you just kick them out.
Oh.
And they're gone. Well, you don't delete the songs, but just for this listening session, they're gone. Or you can move orders around and stuff.
Now, tell me a little bit about the community. How long has the Equalizer been out now?
More than 2 years.
More than 2 years. So you've got, are you sharing how many users you have? Is it like more than a dozen?
It's more than a dozen.
Now, are they pretty active with you? Are they talking to you all the time and giving you suggestions and that sort of stuff?
Most of the communications is through Twitter and a lot of email as well. I have a big feedback button there on my website, so you can just tap it. It's on top.
Mm-hmm.
And email me, and I usually take suggestions very close to my heart. Mm-hmm. And actually,
how many revisions have you made of the software?
This is 2.53, I believe, that's running right now. So tons. I tend to update it once every 2 weeks or so, every 3 weeks. So a lot.
You're obsessed.
Totally.
A little bit of stuff. So let's just jump into some of the other apps you have, because you also kind of get into the more professional, and you're a big fan of musicians, and musicians have glommed onto the iPhone, the iPad, and the iPad a lot. And so you actually have some tools for musicians for editing.
Yeah. So the big bust or the big block seller there is Reforge, which is a waveform editor. So what you can do is you can touch your waveform and edit it. So copy, crop, everything you would expect from that side. But you can also automate volume changes. You can run low, high pass filters through the whole thing. Do the stereo effects, panning left, right, and everything automated. So it's very similar to apps that you have on your desktop,
mm-hmm.
but with the touch feel, it's totally different to use. And you have a big screen, and you can zoom in and out with your hands and stuff. So you really feel like you're touching.
And when I first talked to you about this, I saw this immediately as a tool that I thought journalists would be interested in using for interviews and stuff. And you said you built it for musicians, and primarily it's a music tool, but you are getting a little bit of crossover into some of the other aspects now.
I do. I have a lot of or had some feedback on journalists or podcasters mm-hmm. more that use it, but it wasn't geared to them.
Mm-hmm.
For sure,
but now, but it's good to know that they're using it. But now, are you listening to their feedback as much as musicians?
Of course. No, it's whoever uses my apps has my ear.
Perfect. Now, so Reforge and Equalizer are the two top ones. What are some of the other products that you've got?
Just for fun, I built a multi-band compressor.
Okay.
Again, very specific to musicians and producers. It's fun, and I actually didn't know anything about compressing the dynamic range before I built this app. So I've had to learn a lot,
mm-hmm.
how to use them, what the features are, which features make sense, and how do you transform everything into a touch surface.
Okay.
That was really exciting.
Okay. Yeah. So, and we can find all of your different apps at your website, which is audioforge.ca. Of course, you can also search for them at the iTunes store. Thanks for coming in and sharing with us. That's awesome. And I'm going to play with Reforge. I'm going to have some apps. And I think I promise you, I will install Equalizer and so I can listen better, even with my cheap headphones.
Sounds good.
This is a reminder that if you're driving on your way home and you're worried that you're going to miss any of the scintillating Dottotech, that is, it's currently being broadcast. You can drop by our website at dottotech.com. There we have podcasts of the entire episode. Plus, we work very hard. We dice it up into small, digestible chunks. Each interview, you can just go back and listen to over and over again that one perfect interview that we did. Do you like that feature art?
Scintillating.
It's scintillating.
You're making the website sound sexier than, well, I shouldn't say that. You are making the website sound just as sexy as it is.
It's not really that sexy, but it's useful.
Yes.
It's useful. Dottotech.com.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. MacTech, brought to you by MacStation, your Apple solutions experts.
Chris Miller from MacStation joins me for our weekly look at MacTech. How are you doing, Chris?
I'm very well. How are yourself, sir?
I'm doing pretty well. So the things are picking up in the stores?
Things are moving. It's busy now. We got new lines. School's about to start. Everybody's excited.
Everybody's excited. Now, I want to talk a little bit about Mac accessories. The best I enjoy accessorizing my Mac. So what should the well-accessorized person be having for their Mac?
Well, for me, and it sort of follows definitely with my philosophy with using Macs, is they're remarkably self-sufficient. Mm-hmm. You don't need a bunch of stuff with it, which is always what I've been a big fan of, with a lot of people who are very Apple pro and don't use PCs are really big fans. It's, you get it, it's awesome, it pretty much works. So the things that I like to accessorize with are stuff that merely add to, merely slightly adjust the computing situation you're in to make it that much better. Okay. For instance, one that I use at work and at home is this Mikali Bamboo EcoFan laptop mount. Now, what it is, it's a little wedge.
It's a mouthful.
Isn't it just? 1038B, to be specific. It's a little riser wedge that made out of bamboo. That's the name. That your laptop sits on. So it gets it a little bit up off the desk, so it's at a nice angle for viewing. If you have an external keyboard, it's fantastic, especially with another trackpad off the side, the two Mac accessories. And then there's a little USB plug, and there's these two little impeller fans underneath it that, in addition to keeping it up off the ground and raising the screen up, keeps it nice and cool. So it's a great little unit. It means your machine doesn't heat up, especially for those of us with older laptops where you fry an egg on them.
Yeah. Now, are the newer laptops better as far as the heat goes? Because that was always one of my issues with a Mac, is I always felt that they were the hottest running computers that I'd ever used. I mean, it used to really cook my lap if I actually used it in my lap.
Very true. I mean, the new ones are not nearly that bad, but
They
still do. They get warm. They don't get hot. They get warm.
Okay.
But I've noticed when I've been using this the bamboo, that the core temperature drops between 5 and 6 degrees.
Okay.
Which is good for your lifespan and battery life.
And those fans, are they silent?
You can't hear them. You have to show them that they're there.
You got to prove that one to me because I hate fan noise.
Come on into the stores where I'm using it.
Your store's too noisy. There's fans running all over the place.
Bunch of fans running. All
right. Yeah, that's one thing that drives me. That's why I like using a notebook. That's why I don't mind my iMac for that reason, because it runs nice and quiet.
So, I tell you what, this one, give me a shot on this one. Give me a chance, and I'll show you.
Well, I'm big on cooling. I think people should be cooling their notebooks. So what's next?
Well, the next one, also another really simple, really little device. When you're listening to music or watching a movie on your laptop or even on an older desktop, the sound just isn't that great. I mean, it's good for a laptop, but it's not.
You're talking about using the internal speakers.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, okay.
Not headphones, just sitting there listening to music right off the laptop speakers. There's this device by 12 South. Brilliant little device. It's about 6 inches by 6 inches by 3 inches, and it's a little USB bus-powered, no power supply, subwoofer. What you do is you USB into the machine. It takes the bass line from whatever you're listening to, and it completely gives it a whole new sound. All of a sudden, it sounds like you're listening to really decent speakers, and it'll fill an office very nicely. With Yo-Yo Ma, it is beautiful.
How much does this subwoofer cost?
$90.
$90. Now, you're giving me two additional USB things to plug in.
Mm-hmm.
Should people invest in a powered USB hub?
It depends on which machine you have. If you got a 17, you've already got three on there, you're probably fine. And considering that most Mac peripherals, i.e. the trackpad, keyboard, you can get them wireless. So yeah, they don't take up USBs like it used to be.
Yeah.
So many more hard drives now, even bus-powered ones are FireWire, so you're not using that.
But I'm just thinking now, I'm running out of USB ports all the time, even on my iMac right now. Because I'm thinking of right now, because you got to have a sync cable always for your iPad and your iPhone,
sure,
right? And your whatever your i device is. So there's one for the sync pad. Then I got one for a set of, you know, like a USB headphone, so you can do a better job on Skype or anything, those sorts of things. Usually one for, I guess I got one for a hard drive. Do I have a hard drive?
As I said, you should be using FireWire anyway. Or Thunderbolt now.
Yeah, if I upgrade. But I just keep thinking that a powered USB hub might be a good idea.
Well, the nice part about a lot of these devices is you wouldn't even need a powered one. An unpowered, say, 1-3 or 1-4 USB hub would be able to take care of that little fan unit, like I mentioned. Now, the Mikali subwoofer would require a power source if you're going to do it that way. But a lot of devices, i.e. microphones or data sticks, don't need power. So you can go with a little underpowered one that's 2 inches.
Yeah.
It's about the same as a cigarette lighter.
Now, but it used to be the case that USB would fail if you had too many of them, too many devices running, and you didn't add a powered USB hub. So you're saying that is kind of not.
It's really not the case anymore.
Good. Well, that's good to know.
Yeah, a lot of drives are just much more efficient in using their power source, and so it's.
And come to think of it, I can't remember the last time I had a USB failure.
There you go.
That's back to old Windows XP days, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. What else we got?
The last accessory that I'd probably want to talk about is one that a lot of people don't think about and they really should, a decent laptop bag, especially if they're bouncing around and have a phone with them, have an iPod with them, have the whole nine yards and all their paperwork.
Yeah.
I've seen people who are using the same bags for 10 years, absolutely no padding in them, taking their machine, dropping it on the desk, picking it up, putting it in, dropping it off. And over time, you see the dings, you see the scratches, you see hard drive failures because the computer's asleep. It's not turned off. It's just in a bag with no padding. Whereas if you go with for instance, Book, a fantastic B-O-O-Q.
Okay.
Their line is amazing. It's not that expensive. A really good bag will cost you about $100. And tons of room, tons of pockets. They've got a full they've got a full 3-year warranty on them. They return fantastically. They just stand up to anything, and they look pretty good.
And as back to school, that's a good idea to be thinking about for back to school, because a lot of kids do take technology to school with them. Mm-hmm. And I think this year, of course, we'll see a lot more iPads going to school. So that's one, obviously not as vulnerable as a notebook is, but protecting that notebook is a good idea. So Book bags, we've got a bamboo stand, and we've got a tiny little subwoofer that fills room.
It's sweet.
Drop by Mac Station. You can see all of these. Ask for Chris. He'll help you out.
See you there.
Mac Tech is brought to you by Mac Station, your environmentally friendly solution. Trade up to the newest technology. Save taxes on the new machine. Give a second life to your old Mac. Mac Station. Who said business and pleasure don't mix?
It's hard to believe that this show has just flown by. Art, did you learn something today?
I learned that I could get free television.
Yeah, you're pretty excited about that. Now, do you think it's clear now? Do you think that we've gone through it well and explained it? Because I find it a confusing topic.
Well, from what I understand, what we used to get from rabbit ears on our crappy television that went to 12 channels, that signal has been replaced with a digital signal that will get you clear.
High def
picture.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. The way of getting to it and buying an antenna and everything is a little different.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the idea that it's not. It's either you have it or you don't.
Yeah.
Right.
Not well, fuzzy. What I find funny is just as we've changed our viewing habits, it gets better because now we don't watch anything in real time anymore. We PVR everything and watch it later. But with this, you pretty much have to watch it in real time.
Yeah.
Which is okay. This is for hockey. It's really for nothing except hockey.
Well, what I've noticed is that, growing up as a kid when we have 12 channels, 20 channels or whatever, and you said there's nothing on. Now we have access to over hundreds of channels, and you can still say there's nothing on.
Because Dottotech isn't on TV anymore.
Exactly.
That's why. That is the exact reason. And I also have to thank Michael Kozlowski for coming in. I think that whole story about textbooks being available for rent for university students now, brilliant. That's one of the top stories of the year as far as I'm concerned. I'm very excited about that.
Maybe I'll go back to school.
You might.
And
I'm just looking forward to a smaller bill with my kids that are in school.
That Good point.
Okay. With that, I'm going to call it a show next week. We're going to be talking, what are we going to be doing next week? Oh, we've got, we're going to be looking at some wine apps and a whole bunch of things next week. We're also going to be looking at actually a whole bunch of different apps for the iPad and the iPhone. So I think people are going to want to tune in next week to the show. Thanks so much, Art Factora. I'm Steve Dotto. You've been listening to Dotto Tech.